This is Block by Block, a community news program from WPPMLP 106.5 FM, where we explore issues affecting the Philadelphia area with news reports from members of the community. I'm Kaiser Carter.
You already know what time it is. It's your girl, POC. And for the next half an hour, you will hear stories from our community news reporters about a program that helps young people come up with ways to address gun violence and other challenges, an effort to open a lesbian bar in Philly, and an unusual martial arts gym in North Philadelphia, a mother's fight to ensure her child has the special needs education resources he needs.
But first, voters across the country will select the next president of the United States this fall. But it's not just the big ticket races that are important. Local and state officials also play a big role in our day-to-day lives. Block by Block reporter Jen DeVore brings us this story about what's at stake in Pennsylvania ahead of the April 23rd primary election.
On April 23rd, Philadelphians will head to the polls to cast their votes in yet another highly contested and divisive presidential election. But how closely are you following the race? If you aren't following closely, or at all even, don't worry, you're in good company. I took the mic to the streets to ask Philadelphians about the presidential election.
Are you following the upcoming presidential election?
I was just talking about it, no.
Yes. No.
No.
I think I do, yes.
Slowly but surely.
Yes, I am, sort of.
Oh, not really.
Oh, yeah, I've been following it a little bit, but I'm not really happy with anything that's going on.
How about you? You following the election?
I follow my woman. Whatever her decision is, I'm rocking.
That's a good man.
While some people are at least paying attention to the presidential candidates, they're not the only people running for elected office. There are a whole bunch of local and state offices that are on the ballot, sometimes referred to as down-ballot races. But many of the people I spoke with had trouble naming these other offices. Here's what people said when asked if they know what else they'll be voting for this election.
I'm not quite sure.
No.
No, I'm not sure.
No.
I don't know it.
I have to check the stats. I don't have the information right now.
I really don't really know.
No.
No.
Let me think about that. I don't know. I'm just following the two, top contenders.
In fact, there are a number of local and statewide candidates entering the arena to be your representatives. These offices include Pennsylvania Attorney General, the highest-ranking law enforcement officer in the state, Auditor General, who oversees how the Commonwealth spends taxpayer money, Treasurer, who oversees more than $150 billion in state funds, U.S. Senate, U.S. House of Representatives, and Pennsylvania General Assembly representatives are all roles who make policy that affect our daily lives. And Philadelphia delegates to the state Senate, the final stop for bills created in the House. Philadelphians will also be asked to vote on a ballot measure. This measure would change Philadelphia's constitution to include legal protections for registered community organizations, also known as RCOs, against developers who might sue them, should it pass. That's a lot to consider, right? And it's hard to care about something you don't understand. So I wondered where the Philadelphians I spoke with turned to for civic and political news and information.
I don't.
When I'm in a patient's room and they have the news on.
Maybe YouTube. Yeah, that's about it.
But for those who do want to make sure they know what's on the ballot in next week's primary election, there are several local organizations that have ballot and candidate information. The Philadelphia Citizen has recently published what they call the Ultimate 2024 PA Primary Election Guide, which includes insights into what the offices we're voting for actually do and in-depth profiles of all candidates. WHYY-powered news site Billy Penn has a series of articles and opinion pieces from local residents that will help you prepare for the polls.
I guess I have a lot of studying I need to do.
The Pennsylvania primary is on April 23rd, and polls will be open from 7 in the morning until 8 in the evening. If you do need to check your registration status or find your polling place, you can do that online by visiting vote.pa.gov. This is Jen DeVore for Block by Block.
I want to give Jen a big shout out for that timely story, because April 23rd is actually next week, Kai. So we want people to get out and vote. Philly, if you're listening right now, make sure you get out next week, April 23rd, for the primary election. But also in the city of Philadelphia, we have some more amazing news. The Philadelphia Youth Leadership Council is a program that offers leadership training for young people between the ages of 12 and 18. The program is designed to help set up young Philadelphians for success while offering a platform proposing solutions to violence and other challenges faced by youth in the city. Block by Block, Sherry Pennington spoke with the founder of the group ahead of the annual Youth Leadership Council conference that takes place next month.
My name is Michael Rice. I'm a community engagement specialist with the City of Philadelphia Community Engagement Unit of the Department of Human Services. I'm a founder, I'm a leadership coach, and a mentor. I founded the Philadelphia Youth Leadership Council about 14 years ago. It started as a steering committee for youth in Philadelphia. We brought them together to talk about solutions to the violence that was going on in the city. The youth sat down and they came with ideas and strategies for addressing it. And one of the ideas was creating a youth engagement conference where we did education, connections, and relationship building, and we brought together resources. And we started that 14 years ago. Now we're in the midst of planning our next conference.
What is it that you hope to accomplish at the conference itself? What does that day look like?
We kick it off with workshops and youth presentations. The workshops deal with subjects which they identify, such as human trafficking, substance abuse, violence reduction, coming up with activities and ideas for youth within the community. We also have a youth panel, which we will not only put experts on the different subjects on the panel, but we'll put youth, because we don't just want somebody to talk at the youth. We want the youth to bring forth their experiences, and maybe they'll come up with some solutions, how they solve some problems within it. In addition to that, we want to have a resource fair. So we're looking at community providers. If you've got a community organization and you're doing something to offer kids, it could be dealing with drones or coding, or it could just be some fun after school activities. We want you to be there so you can share that information.
You also mentioned at one point your children were down at Philly Cam. What was going on? Why did you come to Philly Cam?
Oh, yes. Yeah. That's one of the highlights of it. Every year we put together public service announcements in regards to the conference. And also what we do is we combine topics and come up with a little short film. This year's theme is going to be a combination of human trafficking, drug abuse. One of the things they were really concerned with, these youth, even though they're from all over the city, is Kensington. They realize Kensington is a stigma. It's a black eye on Philadelphia, and they really want to go in and to address it. But the way they want to address this is they don't want to just talk about substance abuse. They want to talk about the trauma of living around that, of seeing those people every day and the impact they have on them. And part of this process is we bring the kids together and they name those things they think are the utmost challenges that are facing youth. So they come up with these ideas. And then we ask them, says, well, why would youth want to be interested in this? So then they research it. So they'll come back with statistics. If it has to do with mental health, it may be that between the ages of 10 and 24, depression and suicide is a leading cause of death for kids in that age bracket. So they get those research and then they put it together. And we said, we want you to tell a story. And they tell the story within the PSA about them. So you can go on YouTube and put in Philadelphia Youth Leadership Council and then put in who's really to blame that has to do with gun violence in the community, or wrap it up has to do with STD prevention in the community. And Portia's Pressure has to do with teen pregnancy.
So the conference is coming up, and I like the idea that the children are getting involved. And one thing that you had described for me was what the actual scene looked
like. Actually, we're in the that brainstorming part of it. So we say, come up with a scenario. So they come up with these exciting scenarios, and one more has to do with human trafficking and drug dealers. And they said, we went in on a boat, and they're watching, I guess, BMF and Power and all those things. So they're looking at something like that, but something short and exciting. So we have to figure out how we're going to do a scene on a boat on human trafficking. But that's all that part of that process, that they're producing it for the rest of the youth. It's not just about them. It's not just about the kids that are involved here. We're teaching the kids to be leaders. In order to be a leader, you got to be doing something to affect other people. And this PSA sends that message to them.
Thank you so much, Michael Rice, for sharing that information with us. Thank you.
This PSA definitely sends that information to them. And I definitely want to give a shout out to Sherry, because I agree, getting the children involved, Kai, is what we need for a better future. And so if you are listening and you want to be a part of it and you want to be there, this year's Youth Leadership Council Conference will be held Saturday, May 11th at Temple University Center City Campus. You can get more information by calling 267-303-0653. Again, that number is 267-303-0653.
POC, did you know that according to the Lesbian Bar Project, there are less than 35 operating lesbian bars in the United States?
I did not know that.
Yeah. These spaces are targeted towards queer women, non-binary, and trans people who often feel marginalized in other nightlife spaces. Two Philadelphians are looking to add one more bar to that list by opening a new lesbian bar in Philadelphia. Block by Block reporter Mish Cosarez brings us this story on the grassroots campaign to make the dreams of a whole community a reality.
Right now, Val's Lesbian Bar is a pop-up bar, a white folding table, a cooler full of mixers, and a sign written in marker advertising mocktails and cocktails with fresh ingredients like pear and hibiscus. But in the future, the co-founders behind Val's hope to find a brick-and-mortar location. So they're hosting various fundraising events and collaborating with different organizations throughout Philadelphia to make that happen. Val's co-founder Clover Guilfer says she's always nervous before these events.
I'm always really anxious about how it's going to go, and we have to lug around the bar, and whenever we actually end up putting on an event, I feel so good, and it's so fun. That's the most fulfilling part, and that's what makes me so excited to just have a bar where that's just happening every day.
I caught up with Clover and her girlfriend and co-founder of Val's, Julia Harris, as they took the bar to the Da Vinci Art Alliance in South Philadelphia. The event featured poetry, a social mixer, and, of course, drinks provided by Val's. Here's Julia hyping up the sold-out crowd.
Hi, I'm Julia. She, her.
Hi, Julia.
My girlfriend Clover back there is slinging some drinks. We are the co-owners, founders, whatever, of Val's Lesbian Bar. I just want to say thank you so much for coming out tonight. Your support literally means the world to us. If we're able to make this space happen, it's because of all of you. Every drink that you purchase, every $5 donation is making this come true. And we want the space to be for all of you. Thank you so much to the poets. We're blown away by your talent. And yeah, thank you so much for coming out. And we love you.
So far, every fundraiser for Val's Lesbian Bar has either sold out or reached capacity. In February, the Yours Truly Artist Pop-Up Market, which fundraised for Val's, had an entry line that stretched almost an entire city block.
The support has been overwhelming, I would say. We've been so grateful. People have been incredibly generous with us. People are excited about this. They're not donating just to be altruistic. They're donating because they want the space to exist, and we want to make it happen for them and for us.
So what excites so many people about this project? I walked around the post-poetry social mixer and asked some of the attendees. For people like Greta, it's the same things that may excite anyone about any bar.
Oh my God, just like a place to meet people, to congregate, just a place you can be a regular at that embraces your community.
For Trina, Krinthi, Zane, and Aki, it's a little more about the fun interpersonal drama.
What are y'all excited about having a lesbian bar in Philly?
You know what? It's a mix of fear and excitement, because the drama that will perspire at the brick and mortar. I'm a little nervous about that, but all love.
No, I'm sure you'll go there and see like every single person you've ever met and match with, and it's kind of like
just
okay.
Everyone you know.
But probably like good music. I don't know.
I hope so.
Right.
But for others, it's a little more serious. Jan is a poet who performed at the event. They hope that Val's will be a place where they feel they belong.
Yeah, I've been living in Philly for 15 years. I really haven't had the greatest experiences in spaces designed for members of the LGBTQ plus community. So to support an endeavor like this is absolutely where my passion and my skills align. So I'm super excited to really amplify the voices that defend queer nightlife, especially a lesbian bar. So I'm excited to be a part of this.
Another poet named Kem spoke about how he hopes Val's can continue the legacy of past lesbian bars.
Historically, lesbian bars throughout time have been, you know, a lot of different types of marginalized communities like to hang out, and I hope that that's what Val's Lesbian Bar embodies, somewhere where trans people and black and brown people can actually hang out.
Val's co-founder Julia says it's important to her and Clover to make it an inclusive space.
The baseline thing is no tolerance of harassment within the space, whether that's identity-based or otherwise. We're excited to collaborate with queers of color and make the space a space that they want to be in and like feel like it belongs to them as much as to us.
And that spirit of inclusivity exists even in their drink menu. It boasts just as many mocktails and non-alcoholic drinks as it does cocktails. Clover told me a little more about her thought process when it came to creating the drink menu.
Offering non-alcoholic options is really important to us. And for me, I think sobriety is on the rise. A lot of people don't drink at all right now, a lot more than ever before. It makes good business sense from the perspective of a bar to offer real non-alcoholic options that are interesting to people. But also just philosophically, it's important to offer non-alcoholic drinks to people that show a little bit of respect for that way of living that aren't just an afterthought.
Before I left, Julia had one last thing she wanted to share about the project.
You know, I hope it's really clear to everyone who's following along with us that this is a space for people who identify as lesbians, but also for everyone else in the queer community. And sometimes we do get questions from people saying, oh, I'm X, Y, or Z identity. Am I welcome at your event? And the answer is always yes. We want you to come and be part of our space.
So no matter how you identify, you can follow Val's Lesbian Bar, all one word, on Instagram for updates on upcoming events and information on their opening timeline. For Block by Block, I'm Mish Casares.
You never know, Mish. You might actually push the button further so they can actually get that bar open in Philly. Who knows? We might have our next lesbian bar. But when they say things only happen in Philly, this might be one of them. A group of Philadelphians hold martial art classes at a cooperatively ran gym in North Philadelphia called Neighborhood Martial Arts Project, or NMAP. Coaches volunteer their time and participants pay what they choose for membership, but they also can take classes for free. Block by Block producer Tommy Hagen stopped by the gym recently and spoke with three members who preferred not to share their names, but each have spent time both teaching and taking classes at NMAP. And they have described that the gym's anti-racist environment better aligns with their values than other gyms.
This is Neighborhood Martial Arts Project in North Philadelphia. It's basically a church basement redecorated. Looks kind of like a wrestling room you might have seen in middle school or high school, with colorful mats, cubbies, pop music playing. And there's about five folks in the room working out on the mats, wearing matching robes, tangled up in each other's limbs.
What a lot of times people do is pull the leg and then hook it like this. Yes. So let's partner up. Pretty straightforward. We'll do it once or twice, and then I'll set the timer. On three, one, two, three.
We have a beginner's class from 5:30 to 6:15. We get to practice a specific move, usually a basic one. Maybe somebody that never done it could be very comfortable with it.
Jiu-jitsu is one of the main things they work on here, and many of the trainers tried jiu-jitsu in other spaces but didn't feel welcome there.
The jiu-jitsu scene in general is very right-wing. A lot of police officers, military training, openly talking about like right-wing politics. And then 2020, during the George Floyd uprisings, there were like literal gyms around here that were actually organizing fascist mobs, more or less.
The best way I can put it is like there's acceptable levels of fascism in those martial arts spaces, right? You know, you might have homophobia, racism, transphobia, and here, you know, we pride ourselves on having all people are welcome, all people can train. Well, not all people are welcome, no cops and no active service military members, of course.
But you guys don't allow active cops and active military members to train?
No, because, you know, they're essentially arms of a fascist country, you know, the United States of America, right? We do have a member who is formerly military, but as I said, you know, we don't accept active service military. We do try to be inclusive, but we also do vet people, right? We do COVID tests once per week here. Like, even taking a COVID test or masking has become a sort of political position, right? If somebody's opposed to that, you can kind of tell where they're leaning in. They're like, I'm not going to COVID test.
I knew that they were very open about their politics. You know, from that very first time, it was clear that this is more like a political project than it is a martial arts project.
How did you feel when you were first starting out the group? What was the response like?
Well, in the beginning, it was nothing. It was a little bit of space, a little mad. Nothing. In the beginning, it was scary. It was kind of like, oh, we're going to start a new gym. And again, it was very different reasons. We didn't want no money. We didn't want no profit. We want a space that is open, specifically political. But, you know, thanks to a lot of people in the Philadelphia community, now we have a humble but, you know, cool space.
Now, Neighborhood Martial Arts Project has been running about 5 years in the space they rent, still coaching for free or sliding scale donations, and they've expanded to hosting bigger public events like a community bystander intervention training last October.
We actually went over some like real life applications of someone being choked from behind, how to disengage the choke, how to recognize, you know, which arm is the choking arm that you have to focus on, how to be courageous and the risks inherent in intervening in a situation. And we actually did some like live mock trainings where we had a fake crowd.
Here's how that training sounded. They've gathered big groups to discuss self-defense, de-escalation, and awareness in public spaces. But the trainers told me they approach these ideas differently than other gyms do.
One of the things that we're kind of wary of is the rhetoric and like culture behind like self-defense. This imagined threat on the street that's going to jump out from the alley, and you can imagine what image people have in their head. So learning how to defend yourself in these scenarios that are just, you know, absurd. When most violence occurs in like intimate partner settings, contexts like that, it is useful to know how to maintain your space, and there's a lot of skills that you can learn, but we're always very hesitant to frame things in like the self-defense way. And that's really imagined fear, fears all over the place.
In Philly public spaces, many people do treat strangers as potential safety threats. But when individuals or institutions take this practice too far, it justifies over-policing and criminalization, which NMAP stands against.
We look at combat as more of like a sport, like combat athletics as a sport. The way that we look at our politics, we also try to apply that to our training and also learning how to be a good partner. And that's something that we focus a lot on. You know, it's not just about like trying to improve yourself and always beat everybody in the room. A successful training session is when everybody in the room learns something and gains something.
For NMAP, radical martial arts practice isn't about competition. It isn't about training to fight fascists or arms of the state or fight anybody at all. It's about reframing our relationships with our bodies and others with a focus on autonomy and participation.
It's not just about one person, it's about a community. So I can be going tomorrow, but I know the project will still be going. Yeah, it's more so to create and lay the foundation of something. It's another way to practice sports.
To find more about Neighborhood Martial Arts Project or join a training session, send them a message on Instagram at nmap.phl. For Block by Block, I'm Thomas Hagen.
When most people talk about justice, they're thinking of criminal justice. But Block by Block reporter David Cheney Jr. is exploring other areas where members of Philadelphia's Black community are seeking justice. In the first part of a series called Justice Speaks, David brings us the story of one parent's fight for educational justice.
Education itself is a very challenging subject to discuss. Special education is in a class all by itself. When you start talking about things such as observations, hearings, even lawyers, things can become a little tricky. Recently, I spoke with a parent of a child who needed special services and resources to be successful in the classroom. For privacy purposes, she asked us not to use her name, so I'll call her Rebecca. When her son was in the third grade, he transferred to a new school. But shortly after the transfer, she began to notice some troubling signs.
He was playing chess a lot. So he would come home and say, "Mom, I was playing chess." And I was like, "Well, how are you playing chess when you're supposed to be in class?" So because he was zooming through all the work and they really didn't know what to do with him because he was advanced in a lot of things. So their remedy was, "Oh, well, he can play chess because he's finished his work." He liked to stand up when he's writing. He used to like to walk around the room. And they deemed it to be disruptive because he would stand up. So when I would go to the school, I would say, "Well, why is he playing chess?" And they were like, "Oh, well, he finished all his work and we didn't want it to be a distraction to the other students." And my thing to them was, what that does have to do with him that the other students wasn't finished their work and he was able to zip past his work? Like, what do you guys want to do to challenge him so that way he needs a higher level of work if he's zipping through the work?
After she met with her child's teacher, Rebecca decided to conduct her own investigation. She revisited his 504 plan. A 504 plan is designed for students who do not qualify for special education services under the Individuals with Disability Education Act of 2004. But they may still qualify if the disability can substantially limit their educational performance.
So my first thing was, let me contact the educational attorney, because originally he was supposed to have a 504 plan from the beginning, from when he came from public school. And the 504 plan was to include the academic piece to help challenge him. At first, the school, it was incompetent people that they wanted to put in place for him. And I was just like, "Well, this person don't know what they're doing." So I said, "Okay, well, since y'all saying it's a behavior component to this because of the boredness, then I want him to have a personal care assistant," which is kind of like a one-to-one, but he really didn't need a one-to-one. If y'all saying that it's a behavior component, so how about y'all give him everything that y'all say he needs to help him be successful? And they dropped the ball with that. And it just was too many behaviors around the school. And I think that he kind of got slid by the wayside. So when we got the attorney, we went through the whole due process procedure when the school thought that they was dealing with somebody who didn't know what they were doing. And we had the in-school hearing and we went all the way to the Department of Education. And I was just like, "Okay, let's play." And we was at the school for a whole day and they had their attorney and then I had my attorney and, you know, we had the people from the Department of Education.
Shortly after the hearing and observation, the school itself began to decline due to other related cases and unrelated issues, and eventually it closed. Her son had to be relocated to another school, but at the new school, his plan was upheld. Due to negligence on the part of his former school, Rebecca is still involved in a legal battle to this day. But she is hopeful, and she has provided some great advice for parents who are in similar situations when fighting for their kids' rights.
If your child has something that's documented, the school can't keep calling you to say you got to pick your child up. If it's something that's already on record and they're supposed to support you on that, you got to kind of have some pushback and say, "Hey, well, you guys are supposed to, you know, be supporting my child on that." So if the school make promises to support your child with certain situations, you want that on paper. You want that on paper so they can't say, "Oh, we didn't know that," or "We didn't promise that." Email will always be your friend because it's a write-up, infraction. Whatever they send you about your child, you want to keep all of that. Create a folder in your email that just has your child name on it.
Rebecca's resilience and advocacy for her son's education is proof that parents have significant power and influence. For more information regarding special education and students' rights, please refer to your local school's website.
Block by Block is produced by some amazing producers: Oscar Castro, David Cheney Jr., Mies Casares, Jen DeVore, Barbara Martin Ellis, Thomas Hagen, Sunny Morgan, Sherry Pennington, and Shania Weish. And you cannot forget about us,
Kaiser Carter,
and your girl PLC, and our amazing board op tonight, David Cheney Jr.
Brad Linder is Radio News Managing Editor for WPPM. Peter Liu is Radio Operations Manager, and Allison Durham is WPPM's Radio Program Manager.
Mark your calendars. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a new episode of Block by Block, featuring more stories about issues affecting life in the Philadelphia region. You can find past episodes of the show on PhillyCam SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever else you find podcasts.
Thanks for listening.